Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after midnight here on the WGN Radio Theater Program, 225 in the series. A little late start because of Hawks post-game. But you know what, folks? Tomorrow we will be on at our regular time, 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa? How are you?
Hi, Carl. I'm glad to be here even at midnight, even 1 hour late. We still have 2 great hours of the show.
We do. In the booth, we have DJ Cash, and that means everything's going to go smoothly. We are going to eliminate the Great Gildersleeve, so we will have 2 mysteries on this edition. We'll have Suspense, starring Agnes Moorehead, and then the Mystery Playhouse, starring Peter Lorre. Those are our 2 classic radio shows, and it's all brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as the leader of a military group in the upcoming action film Rampage, based on the classic 1980s video game.
Yeah, what do
they
win? Yeah,
they're going to win 2 tickets to see Dracula at Mercury Theater Chicago.
Very good. Here's the hint. Everyone thinks I look just like this guy.
Oh,
that's the first hint.
I agree.
And the second hint is he starred as Big Richie in Magic Mike.
That's the Mikey I remember. Look, if you ain't ready to bring it old school this weekend, then you need to hop off this food truck right now.
All right. Hop off that food truck.
I think that's your twin.
Right now. I know. I get it all the time. People are always saying, I look just like this guy. All right. If you know who that is, call us 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Win some tickets to see Dracula.
And we are back playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
That's the Mikey I remember. Look, if you ain't ready to bring it old school this weekend, then you need to hop off this food truck right now.
I even sound like him, Lisa.
You do. Your voice is deep.
Finally,
just like
someone
him.
In L.A. that looks and sounds just like me and vice versa.
I agree. I bet he thinks so, too.
I know.
I bet he's dying to meet you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, our wonderful producer found a caller. You took a caller off the air, and we found out that Rachel knew that that was Joe Manganiello. Your twin.
Yeah, he's Italian like me. I'm Italian.
Right,
Italian.
Same thing.
Yeah.
And Joe has just won, Rachel won 2 tickets to see Joe. I bet I could set him up with a couple of tickets if he wants to see it too. But Joe and Rachel have both won tickets to see Dracula. It's a modern take on the classic tale. It's now playing at Mercury Theater Chicago through November 5th. You can call 773-325-1700 for tickets, but Rachel's a big winner. So congratulations to Rachel. And
very good.
It's all good. I also wanted to mention,
yes,
I know your book just came out, and I know you've had quite a flurry of orders.
Yes.
And we had this great post on our Facebook page just this afternoon. Greg from somewhere in Wisconsin, he posted a picture of the cover of the book. It's in front of his cool radio. Check it out. We're so excited for you. We hope that everybody will be interested in ordering the book.
Where's
from
it
you.
Posted? On our Facebook
it's
page?
It's posted on our Facebook page. Go to Facebook, like us while you're there, and make sure to check out the picture.
WGN Radio Theater.
And make sure to check out the picture of this awesome book that Carl just wrote with Martin Grams.
Well, the book is called The Top 100 Classic Radio Shows. It's a 225-page big coffee table book, and each page, each of the 100 classic radio shows, like The Shadow and Gunsmoke and Suspense and all that, each has a double-page spread. There's hundreds and hundreds of pictures, for period pictures from these classic radio days. And then you get 3 CDs with 6 classic radio shows, and then you can log on to a special website and digitally download 72 more shows. So you get 78 shows in total. The entire book is only $29.95. And if you order it off our website, I will personalize it and autograph it to you, and I will ship it to you. I will pay for the shipping, so it's $29.95. Just go to our website, WGN Radio Theater. If you go to WGN Radio Theater, there'll be a pop-up, and you can just click it and learn more about the book. I'd love you to have the book. I'm very excited about it. And you know what, Lisa? November 1st, it'll be at all the Barnes & Nobles, B. Dalton's, Walden's, Walmart, Costco. So it's going to be across the country in all of the different bookstores November 1st. I'm going to go into every single one of them across the country.
I bet you are.
Going on a road trip.
I'm
going to count to see how many there are. Okay, there's five in this store.
Well, you go on the road trip, and I will host this show with Miss Sarah. We can do it.
She would love that. I know that. All right, so we are going to skip the Great Gildersleeve because we had one of our hours eaten up by Hawks postgame. So we're going to start things off with Suspense. We've been doing this every single week, Agnes Moorehead starring in an episode of Suspense throughout October. And this particular episode is called The 13th Sound. It's from February 13, 1947. Here's Agnes Moorehead in part one of Suspense.
Yes, Roma wines taste better because only Roma selects from the world's greatest wine reserves for your pleasure. That's R-O-M-A, Roma wines. Those better-tasting California wines enjoyed by more Americans than any other wine. For friendly entertaining, for delightful dining. Yes, right now, a glassful would be very pleasant as Roma wines bring you Agnes Moorehead in a remarkable tale of suspense.
We were driving too fast, but I knew that if I slowed down at all, I would begin to tremble. And so, although the road was tortuous, climbing steeply up the mountain, I kept my foot pressed hard on the gas pedal. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see that my husband was looking quietly into the green valley far below. He looked peaceful now. He had made his speech about driving too fast. I'd asked him to be quiet, and now he was quiet. I wondered what he would do if I stopped the car and told him right then that we were driving up to the Johnson house so that I might kill him. I parked the car on the highway at the foot of the dirt road leading up to the house. We walked quickly behind the heavy trees. My husband stopped once to wipe the dust off his shoes. I hurried him on, and we soon arrived at the front door. As planned, I'd forgotten the key. I did open my purse and look, however, and that gave me the opportunity to release the safety catch on the gun I had borrowed from my husband's belongings. I suggested that we try one of the windows. He agreed, and we slowly made our way through the underbrush that was growing wild at the side of the stucco building until we reached a first-floor window. The window was set high above the ground, and my husband had to stretch his body to reach it. I waited until he had his back to me, with his hands raised high in the air, reaching for the window frame. Then I opened my purse, took out the gun, aimed very carefully at a spot just in the center of his left shoulder blade, and pulled the trigger four times. He didn't fall right away. He had had his fingers over the window ledge, ready to unfasten the catch when the bullet hit him. With some terrible effort, he dug his nails into the stucco and tried to keep from dying. I couldn't move. I wanted to scream, but my throat felt paralyzed. He tried to turn his face and look at me, but he hadn't that much life left. At last, he fell. Better for it. I bent and looked at my husband's body. He was quite dead. I wiped off the gun, his gun, and threw it behind an acacia bush. Then I walked back to the car, slowly and carefully removing any of my footprints which showed in the loose dirt of the road. At the car, I emptied some cigarette butts from the dashboard ashtray onto the road, dusted my shoes, then turned around and drove home. I put the car in the garage, went in and had my shower, and lay down in the library to wait. A few minutes after the grandfather clock struck 11, the telephone rang.
This is she.
This is Jonathan Brown, Sheriff's Office. I have some bad news for you.
My husband?
Yes, ma'am. He's been killed. Miss Skinner? Hello, Miss Skinner. You all right?
I waited quietly for a moment. Then I let the phone fall to the floor. I listened until I heard Jonathan Brown hang up. Then I replaced my telephone on its stand. Went into the kitchen for some ice, which I put in a large Turkish towel. I then arranged myself carefully and attractively on the living room divan. And waited again.
Miss Skinner!
In here, please.
Oh, yes. All right, Miss Skinner, that was a stupid thing for me to do, breaking the news that way, you know.
I'm all right.
Well, I came over as soon as you dropped the phone.
Well, I felt faint suddenly.
Well, no wonder.
Tell me what happened, Mr.
Brown, Jonathan Brown, Sheriff's Office.
Mr. Brown, please sit down.
Thank you. Well, your husband was up at the Johnson house this afternoon, as well as we can figure. Up there on the side of the mountain, you know, and, he must have been trying to get into the window, and somehow, somebody, well, got him. I'm sure you want me to tell you.
I'm sorry. Go on, please.
Well, we looked around the place, couldn't see anything. Though we found the, weapon, it was a gun, found in the brush near where he was, and no footprints or anything except tire marks down the main highway and a bunch of cigarette butts where someone must have been sitting in the car, waiting, you know.
Those were my tire marks.
You was up there?
Well, I had an appointment to meet my husband this afternoon at the foot of the road leading up to the Johnson house. He had said that he'd had some business to attend to and would get a ride with this other person. He was very mysterious about it.
Uh-huh.
And I waited for an hour or more at the foot of the road. You were so clever to recognize the meaning of those cigarette stubs.
Well,
when he didn't come, I thought perhaps I was mistaken about the appointment. And so I drove home. Oh, I think about perhaps I'd gone up to the house, I might have saved my poor dear husband's life.
They're not terrible, Chuck, I know.
But I'm all right. You know. I'm all right. I'll be all right.
Well, now, don't you worry about a thing, Miss Skinner. The sheriff's office will round up the guilty party or parties and have them brought to trial, you know.
Yes, I'm sure. I slept well that night for the first time in 10 years. My husband during his lifetime had snored loudly and steadily, and during his later years he had acquired the nervous and distressing habit of grinding his teeth in his sleep. This night all was quiet and peaceful in the house. In my house. And as I say, I slept beautifully. The next few days were also beautifully quiet. A few photographers and newspaper men, but they were kind and gentle and didn't make too much bother. Finally, Mr. Jonathan Brown called to say that he would send a car for me on Friday morning, the next day, as it turned out, to take me to the coroner's inquest. The small courtroom was crowded, and almost everyone there eyed me with great sympathy. The inquest proceeded evenly. There was as yet no evidence as to the identity of my husband's murderer. I again stated that I had left the tire marks and cigarette stubs at the foot of the road that led to the Johnson house. No, I hadn't heard a shot. No, my dear husband had no enemy. Then...
I've had this blackboard brought to court so that I might show the position of the body when found. I think it might be of interest.
Very well. Proceed.
The body is found just below the first-story window on the left side of the house. The dead man was obviously trying to gain admittance, you know. He didn't die immediately, as I will show you. But stayed alive long enough to try to keep himself from falling, since marks from each of his fingernails were found running down the side of the building. Here, then, is the window sill. And here are the marks of his fingernails. And here is the spot where the body lay when it was discovered. And here is the house.
As he talked, he watched me.
Ground floor.
And I didn't know why until I heard the first scrape of the chalk against the blackboard.
Probably here.
For one awful moment, it was the sound that had been made by my husband as he tried so desperately to hold himself alive.
I find myself tightly holding the wooden table in front of me. My arms and body tense, trying not to faint.
Since a large deposit of the dried stucco from the building is found under each of the victim's fingernails, I believe I can best illustrate the manner of the victim's last moments with a physical illustration. Suppose I am the victim, you know, and this blackboard is the side of the building. We hear the gunshots, and then the victim slowly sinks to the ground.
Oh, please. Please, I can't say. Please, don't make it. Oh, Lord.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Agnes Moorehead in The 13th Sound. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
I must have been taken home from the inquest. For the next consciousness I had, I was lying on the guest bed. In the corner sat Mr. Jonathan Brown. He must have seen my eyes open.
Why? Feeling better?
Yes, thank you. I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Quite a strain, you know.
Yes, it was quite a strain.
The coroner asked whether it'd be all right to go on without you. Everybody seemed agreed, you know, so you finished up while the doc looked you over.
What happened?
Oh, he said you'd be all right. Shock.
I meant about the... My husband.
And his death, the hand of persons unknown, you know.
Is there anything further I must do?
Not a thing, Miss Skinner.
It's been very kind.
Well, it's a terrible thing happened to you. Well, I'm going now, if there's nothing more you need from
me. No, nothing, thank you.
Well, goodbye then, and don't you worry. We'll find who did it, you know.
After he had left, I had the time to be angry at myself for my behavior at the inquest. What must the people have thought? To faint only from the noise of a piece of chalk on a blackboard? I wondered if Mr. Brown had suspected anything, because as I remembered back to earlier afternoon, he had been watching me as he drew those silly little diagrams on the board. He hadn't been looking anywhere else, not at the coroner or at any of the reporters, not even at what he was doing. He'd been looking at me. Well, of course he was looking at me. He was showing his sympathy. I slowly allowed myself to return to my former position in the community. I was able now to do the things I'd always wanted to do, but had been restrained from doing by a certain attitude of my husband. He had never liked entertaining. He didn't believe that we should belong to the country club and take a civic pride in the fact that our home was the largest and most beautiful in the community. In fact, it was his desire to sell our lovely home that caused me to finally take that complete and drastic step. The first evening that I accepted an outside invitation was for one of the Wednesday night evenings of bridge at our club. At my table were the president of the bank and his wife. As I sat down, I noticed that a window pane on my left was shattered.
Good evening, Miss Gray. Miss Gray.
Good evening, Miss Brown.
Good evening, Miss Skinner.
Good evening, Mr. Gray.
Well, I'm afraid I'm the culprit here. Playing ball with the kids this afternoon, and I threw one right through your lovely window.
Oh, really?
But I got old Sam here. I brought him along with new painted glass, and he'll fix us up shipshape in no time at all. Go ahead, Sam, right away.
Yes,
there.
Mr. Brown, sure. Don't mind me, folks. I'll be through here in just a jiffy. Don't worry about
it. Oh, incidentally, Miss Skinner, I always meant to ask you whether or not you minded noises, especially. Sharp noises, like, you see, chalk on a blackboard.
I don't understand. Chalk on a blackboard?
At the inquest, I always wondered about it. You fainted just when the chalk was scratching across the blackboard.
I don't remember hearing it. I'm afraid I fainted before you drew any diagrams. I assume that's what you were planning to do, draw a diagram?
That's what I was planning to do, yes, ma'am.
Yes. Does he have to do that?
Is something wrong, Mrs. Skinner?
Does he have to do that? I can't.
All right, that is the first portion of Suspense with the 13th Sound, starring Agnes Moorehead from February 13th, 1947.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, thanks, Roger. It is 12:38 in the morning, and this is program 225 in the series. And don't forget, we do have a full podcast of this show. Every single one of our shows that we've ever done since 2000, what? When did we start?
We started two and a half years ago.
Yeah. Every single one of them.
That'd be 2015.
Gosh, there's a lot of them. 225 of them.
It's a lot.
There's a lot of podcasts. You can listen. You know, if you're, if you just can't get enough
start
of the
W. Number three.
Yeah, don't start with one or two. If you can't get enough of the WGN Radio Theater, just Google. Just go to Google and type in WGN Radio Theater podcast. That's how I find them.
It
There's
works.
Other ways to do it,
there,
too.
There are, yes.
all right, so we're listening to Suspense, starring Agnes Moorehead. And yes, she was Endora on Bewitched. Absolutely, she was. And a little later, we're going to listen to Peter Lorre in the Mystery Playhouse. And we have a really cool, fun fact about Peter Lorre.
It's posted on our Facebook page.
Yeah, check that out. A very interesting, especially if you're a James Bond fan like I am, very interesting fun fact about Peter Lorre.
So don't give it away. Go to the Facebook page. Make sure to like us and check out our Peter Lorre picture and fun fact.
Right. All right, time now for the conclusion to Suspense.
I stayed at home for the next 2 days. I canceled all appointments. The heat really was unbearable. In October, I resumed my activities. I began to see people again. I grew especially interested in chamber music. Through my activity, I arranged a musical evening to be given by a group of which I was the second vice president. They planned the formation of the Philharmonic Society eventually. I went to the musicale alone, and I was studying my program when...
Is this seat taken?
Good evening, Mr. Brown.
Well, Miss Skinner, good evening. Didn't recognize you, ma'am.
Well, I was to be joined later.
Well, I'll just sit here a moment then. You know, I'm terribly sorry about the other night.
It's really nothing at all for you to be sorry about.
Very kind of you to say that, you know, but I do feel guilty as all sin, being the cause of getting sick like that.
Oh, really, Mr. Brown, I wasn't sick at all. Mr. Gregg told me I'd probably been affected by the heat. It was very close in the club that night, if you'll remember.
Yes, yes, well, it was. Well, just so I don't feel it was my fault, you know.
No, I don't want you to feel that it was your fault.
That's very kind of you, you know. If you don't mind, I'll stay here until whoever holds the seat gets it, all right?
That's all right.
We crave your indulgence and a certain open-mindedness for giving a fair chance to the first piece with which we're going to open our program this evening. The title of this piece is The 13th Sound. And the composer is young Julian Carillo. And this piece, because of the unorthodox nature of it, created a veritable furor in New York City some weeks ago on the occasion of its premiere. It's what you'd call, I guess, modern music. And the really unusual thing about it is that the instruments, instead of playing as they usually do in Mozart, Haydn and such classical veins, play in quarter tones. Now, a quarter tone is somewhere in between the other tones, such as the we are accustomed to hearing. So on this following piece, the instruments are not playing, as you would think, out of tune. This is the way it is supposed to sound. Thank you. So now... Now the various members of the quartet will tune their various instruments into these quarter tones. And this is quite a short piece, but I know you're going to like it. Tune up, gentlemen.
Well, should be very interesting. Think so, Miss Skinner? 13th sound. Have you heard it?
No, I haven't.
It's too hot again, Miss Skinner? It does get stuffy in here.
It's hot in here.
You're terribly painted.
I'm quite all right. Excuse me. Will you let me out? Will you please excuse me? I left Mr. Brown sitting there. My man drove me home. I never liked modern music. I locked all the doors and I turned on all the lights. And then I did a foolish thing. I found a hammer and a piece of board. And I beat and beat and beat and beat on the board with a hammer as hard as I could. And finally, the heavy, steady, safe pounding that I made drove the other sharp, shrill, awful noise from my mind. Then I turned out all the lights and opened the windows and went to sleep. I didn't sleep well, but I didn't stay awake either. I hadn't set the alarm next to my bed, and when I first awoke the next morning, for a minute I couldn't remember what had happened. I felt drugged. I got out of bed and put on the lovely chartreuse brocade housecoat and started downstairs. The sun was shining outside. It was a beautiful day. Not the sort of day when you could be disturbed by unrelated noises. I felt grand when I got downstairs. Then I heard... What? I didn't know. I didn't care. I knew only that I had to stop it before it happened to me again. Stop it! Please stop it!
Pardon me, miss.
Get out of here! Get out of here! Who told you to do your work here? Did someone tell you to make that noise near my house?
Why, no, ma'am. The lawnmower darn thing wasn't cutting. I had to
get out! Go on! Get off this property at once!
Yes, ma'am.
Go!
Sure.
Don't ever come back! Don't ever come back! Don't!
Morning, Miss Skinner. Lovely day.
Back to my living room. I stood shivering there in a beam of sunlight. I waited for him to come bursting into the room after me. I waited. And then the doorbell rang. Who is it?
It's Mrs. Gray.
Oh, just a moment. Come in.
But did I disturb you?
Oh, no. Well,
then I will come in. But I can only stay a minute.
Would you like some coffee?
Oh, no, thank you. When I was so sick, you remember, the doctor absolutely forbid me having any more coffee.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, sit down, please.
Do you drink much coffee?
Why do you ask?
Well, I thought perhaps your recent attacks might have been caused by that. Mr. Gregg is a great one for aspirin and salt tablets. I think it's much simpler than that. Cut out coffee.
Well, I think my attacks were just caused by this heat. I plan a sea voyage.
Oh, how splendid. That'll certainly fix you. You know, I don't mean to be disrespectful, heaven knows. But perhaps on the boat, you might meet a fine young man who... Well,
perhaps.
When do you plan to leave?
This afternoon. I'm leaving for New York.
Oh, you can't.
Pardon?
Well, the clubhouse, the unveiling ceremonies are this afternoon.
Oh, I forgot.
Well, you simply can't leave. Well, we have no one who can replace you on the speaker's platform.
Oh, well, I... Well... Well, all right then, Mrs. Gregg. I'll stay for the ceremony. I drove to the new clubhouse with Mr. and Mrs. Gregg. The building was really very lovely. It was almost ready for occupancy. We were unveiling a heroic figure which graced the entranceway. Our speaker's platform was built alongside the figure, and quite a few of the members and their families were sitting on the wooden benches in the front patio, waiting for the ceremony to begin.
Oh, hello!
Isn't this exciting?
Oh, yes, very.
You ladies have done a marvelous job.
Oh, thank you.
What's that fellow doing up there?
Where?
See, up on the roof there.
Oh, yes. Makes me nervous to see people at such heights.
Awful close to the edge. I guess he knows his business, I imagine.
Yes, I suppose.
I'm very anxious to hear your little talk, Mrs. Skinner.
Well, thank you.
I think you've managed admirably since you're unfortunate. Well, you understand.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I think we should get on with it, eh?
Well, I believe it'll be only a few more minutes.
What?
What is it?
Good heavens, look, that workman. He's going
there now.
Well, they've got to catch him.
Oh, they will. They will.
They've got to catch him.
What?
Oh.
He's hurt. Oh, turn your eyes, lady. Turn your eyes.
I did it.
Why, nonsense.
I did it.
You had nothing to do with it.
I did it. I did it.
Why?
I did it.
Oh, no, not well.
I did it.
Let me take your word.
Sign it, Jonathan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shame. Yeah. People do funny things.
Yeah. Did you pay the fella?
Mm-hmm. He's clever. Very clever.
Sure is. I really thought he was falling off of that building.
Mm. Used to be an acrobat.
Oh. Say, how did he make that noise?
Yeah. Holding tenpenny nails in his hands. Scraped them along the face of the building as he slid down.
Yeah, did you think of that, too?
Mm-hmm.
Made an awful racket.
Uh-huh. Pretty. Nice lady, you know.
Yeah.
What the devil are you doing?
Huh? Oh, fixing my nails, I guess.
Well, cut it out, will you?
Sure. What's the matter with you?
Noise makes me nervous, I guess. You know?
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Roma, America's favorite wine. This is Ken Niles returning for a curtain call with the brilliant star of tonight's suspense play, Agnes Moorhead. Apparently, Agnes, you're not superstitious, accepting the lead in a play called The 13th Sound on February 13th.
Superstitions are no phobia with me, Ken, but I do have one.
What is it?
I refuse to give a party for 13 people.
Yes, but even a 13th guest is in luck, Agnes, when you serve Roma Port. Ruby red, fragrant, nectar-sweet Roma California Port adds warmth to the welcome for everyone. And Roma Port is so easy to serve. You simply pour and hospitality reigns.
Yes, Ken. Roma Port does make entertaining a pleasure.
Not only that, Agnes. There's a difference you can taste in all Roma wines. And this better taste begins with the choicest grapes in all California. Then Roma's unmatched skill and winemaking resources guide these luscious grapes unhurriedly to tempting taste perfection. Later, Roma places this rich taste treasure with Roma wines of years before. And finally, Roma selects from the world's greatest wine reserves for your pleasure.
Well, it's easy to see why Roma wines taste better, Ken.
Yes, Agnes, and here's the most conclusive proof of all. A gift basket of Roma wines for you and your guests to enjoy with the compliment of Roma, the greatest name in wine.
I'm delighted, Ken. Thank you very much. And good night.
Tonight's suspense play was written by Kathy and Elliot Lewis. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Anne Baxter as star of Suspense. Produced and directed by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. Stay tuned for the thrilling adventures of the FBI in Peace and War, following immediately over most of these stations. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as James Stewart, William Bendix, Eddie Bracken, and others. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, that is Suspense with a 13th Sound from February 13th, 1947, starring Agnes Moorehead. And also in the cast, John McIntyre, William Johnstone. And that was written by Kathy and Elliot Lewis. They were married. Kathy Lewis was on a million radio shows. She was just on so many. And then Elliot Lewis, of course, was he played Frankie Remley on Phil Harris and Alice Faye. And he became the producer-director of Suspense in just a few years from this point in 1947. And so there was quite, kind of a happy family there on Suspense. That was sponsored by Roma Wines, as heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed that. That's not Halloween music. I thought we were going to have something like scary, like,
woo! It is Halloween music.
I'll do something scary
music
for you tomorrow. We're here all weekend.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it's
Roger,
that's Halloween-y music she's playing.
It is?
Yeah, Halloween.
I didn't want to say it. I don't want to get kicked off.
I don't think
off
you
the
can
radio.
Say Halloween-y on the air.
That's what I said. Depends on your motive for saying it, I think.
I think it's a description of the music.
Yeah.
Yeah, Halloween-y.
Yeah.
Depends how you spell it.
You know that Halloween is my favorite holiday. Well, I like Christmas first, I think.
I like
but
my
then
birthday.
I like Christmas, and then I like Halloween-y.
I'm going to go with my personal birthday as first.
Presents.
And then Lisa's birthday is number three. Right?
Yeah. No, number one.
Number one.
I had a great birthday. Well, I had so many listeners who reached out and were so kind and generous and warm that I really appreciate that.
You know, I was just going to say, speaking of your birthday, Roger, this happens pretty much every year. I buy Lisa something really great.
Don't, please don't say it.
And
please,
you know what she does?
I beg
she
not
returns
to.
It?
She returns it. She returns it. Yeah.
But isn't it her prerogative?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, I picked it out. I bought her something. I went, shopping for her.
And you know her well, so you know what she likes.
She loved
them.
She saw them and she was like, I love these boots. I bought her boots. I bought her Hunter boots.
They didn't fit right.
She loved them.
All right. So,
see? So
okay. So go back and get the size that fits you.
They just didn't feel right on my foot. They weren't cut for me.
So she returned the gift that I gave her.
No, I exchanged them. I brought them back to the same
store.
There
you go.
Oh, that's too
And got
oh,
a pair that fit better. There
scary.
We go.
That's scary music right there.
Sarah knows how to do it.
I'll never forget when I saw it. Is this Exorcist?
No.
No.
No. Come on.
Exorcist is Tubular Bells.
How do you love good, Halloween though? And don't know this?
This is good. I don't know. It's scary.
It's Halloween-y.
It's Halloween-y.
What is this from?
Halloween.
Oh, Halloween, right. That's right.
The guy with the
I
mask.
Made it super Hello. Easy for you.
Wow.
Well, he only knows
Carl
it as Halloween-y.
Can mess that up.
So.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know
Listen,
what a Halloween-y
the
song
trivia
is.
Question has to be something to do with old-time radio. If you do that, I'll get it. If not...
He's out.
You're canceled.
All right, well, Roger, she returned it.
I exchanged it for a different pair of boots from the same store that fit me properly.
I have yet to ever return anything you've ever given me. I have
you
it all in
away.
a box.
It's got a back room that's locked.
He just throws them away.
Yeah, it's in my vault.
Down four floors underneath.
It's in the basement that was flooded. That's where I keep the stuff Lisa gives
That's
me.
That's where you keep prized possessions.
All right. In this hour, we have an episode of The Mystery Playhouse starring Peter Lorre, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop.
This actor stars in the upcoming film Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the second installment in the film series.
All right.
And the winner is going to get two tickets to see Dracula. We're staying in our Halloween theme.
All right,
month.
Dracula. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor starred as Ed Wood.
Well, Mr. Weiss, look no further. I'm your man. I work fast and I'm a deal. I write and direct.
I
and
write
I'm good.
And direct. And I'm good.
Again, twins.
Yeah. Yeah. I get this guy.
There's another twin of yours.
I look like this guy all the time.
You do really have a similar look.
312-981-7200. Who is that actor? Give us a call. Win some tickets.
We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
Well, Mr. Weiss, look no further. I'm your man. I work fast and I'm a deal. I write and direct. And I'm good.
And I'm good.
Oh, you're good. And Casera took a caller offline, and we found out that Maureen knew that that was Johnny Depp, the one and only. So Maureen is a winner. She won two tickets to see Dracula. It is playing right now at the Mercury Theater Chicago through November 5th. This is the play Dracula based on the tale. You can call 773-325-1700 for tickets, but congratulations to Maureen.
All right, very good. Well, you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
It is time for the Mystery Playhouse. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this series. So, you know, we had all of our armed forces, where a lot of them were stationed overseas. They're in Europe. And not all of the radio shows that we played here were able to be broadcast overseas. So we would have to make electrical transcription discs of them, send them over there, and then they would play them for our men and women fighting overseas. Well, the armed forces took a lot of the mystery shows like Suspense and Inner Sanctum and the Mole Mystery Theater, and they cut off the beginnings and end and took all the commercials out. And then they had hosts sometimes hosted under a banner called the Mystery Playhouse. And for a while, Howard Duff did that. And for another while, Peter Lorre did it from 1944 through 1946. So what happened was, it was the bodies of other shows, right, with an interesting open and close by Peter Lorre. And that's what we have for you right now, a show called the Mystery Playhouse. This is called The Lady in the Morgue, and it's from May 15th, 1945, part one of the Mystery Playhouse.
Hello, creeps. This is Peter Lorre, here again to welcome you to the Mystery Playhouse. Tonight we bring you a story by Jonathan Latimer called Lady in the Morgue. It offers Detectives Crane and O'Malley the delightful problem of solving three murders and interviewing a lovely brunette, a lady who is mysteriously related to the unsolved crimes. Come with me to the morgue for the beginning of our little story, huh? Oh, don't let these stiffs bother you. Their troubles are over. But for those two detectives over there, the murders are just beginning. Come down these steps. Right this way. Come. Come, come.
I'm going nuts hanging around here.
Aw, stop squawking, O'Malley.
3 days just sitting in the morgue. I'm beginning to feel like a stiff myself.
Look, I don't like it any better than you do, O'Malley, but we're hired as private detectives to sit here. And we're going to sit here until somebody identifies the dame's body.
Okay. How do you know Alice Ross isn't Alice Ross?
Why don't you stop being a jerk? That name's a phony.
You know, Crane, the whole thing seems phony to me.
What?
Who is this rich New York guy, Cortland? He hires us by a telegram. We've never seen him. And why is he so interested in this little blonde who commits suicide?
Look, I don't think it's going to do any good, but I'm going to tell you for the last time. He thinks it's his sister, Catherine Cortland. She ran away from home a couple of years ago, chasing after some musician.
Gee.
Hey, that's the desk bell. Looks like the morgue's got a customer. Leave him and the attendant ought to answer it. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he anyhow?
Down in the vaults with the stiffs.
Well, then maybe we better answer it, O'Malley. Might be somebody to claim the body. Looking for someone, mister?
For a couple of private detectives, Crane and O'Malley.
Oh, I'm Crane. And that character over there is O'Malley.
My name's Cortland. I sent you that wire.
Oh, come right in. Come right in. Glad to meet you.
Me too.
Delayed in New York. Expected to be here yesterday. What about the girl?
No information yet, Mr. Cortland. And if you think she might be your sister, Catherine, why, you can identify yourself.
Well, yes. Where?
This way, Mr. Cortland.
Thanks.
The body's down in the vault. Leave him in the morgue, attendant. You see, he's down there.
I'll wait here for you, Crane. I can't stand looking at that girl again.
Come on, come on. Stick with the client.
Oh, okay. Watch your foot, and the stairs are slippery.
Full.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Now, what makes you think this Alice Ross girl might be your sister, Mr. Cortland?
Well, just what I read in the New York papers, that's all. Blonde girl, blue eyes, suicide. Also, my sister Catherine wrote us about 2 months ago that she was finished with her old life. She ran away from home with the musician 2 years ago. And...
The body's in here.
Lieberman! Hey, Lieberman, where are you? I thought you said Lieberman was down here, O'Malley.
Yeah, I saw him go down about 20 minutes ago.
Come on, Mr. Cortland. The body's on tray number 27.
Oh, yes. 4, 10, 14...
17, 25, 27.
You pull out the tray. I don't like things like this.
Oh, there's nothing to be afraid of. She's dead. All you gotta do is grab the handle and... Go ahead, O'Malley. You pull it out.
Oh, all right.
Well, that's a man's body. A man, not a woman.
Yeah, she's certain. You?
What? Hey, it's Lieberman, the morgue attendant. Murder.
Murder in the morgue?
It's murder, all right. It's head smashed.
But where's the girl's body?
Yeah, Mr. Cortland, this is a job for the police.
I don't give two hoots about your private detective credentials, Crane.
But, Lieutenant...
Not yours either, O'Malley. Now, look, a man was murdered in the morgue today and a woman's body was stolen. And you and O'Malley and this fellow Cortland were the only ones who could have done it.
Why don't you stop acting like a movie cat, Lieutenant Grady?
What?
Think it through. Cortland is my client. He hired O'Malley and me to line up the girl as his sister.
Right, I sent Crane a wire from New York.
All right, skip the details.
Oh, use your head, Lieutenant Grady. You're forgetting a couple of things.
Huh?
You remember that Lieberman, the morgue attendant, had a handful of red hair in his hand. Have O'Malley and Cortland got red hair? Have I?
Huh? You know darn well you have!
And we also know that somebody held Lieberman from in front while someone else slugged him from behind. Otherwise, why would Lieberman's wrist be torn and bloody?
Okay, okay.
Lieberman had the hair in his left hand. Now, if I were holding your wrists, I'd be holding your left wrist with my right hand. Wouldn't I?
I'd be holding
your weaker hand with my strongest.
All right. Now, what are you trying to prove?
We're trying to prove...
One at a time, O'Malley.
Okay, go ahead, Crane.
Thank you, Professor. We're trying to prove that whoever held Lieberman's hands was red-headed and left-handed.
And none of us are left-handed already.
All right, Mr. Cortland, pipe down. Crane, go on from there.
Lieutenant, we're going to find that missing body for you.
All right, Crane. But if you're getting away with something new... And something right now, it's only temporary.
All right. Come on, O'Malley.
And look, don't forget, Crane. One false step, and I'll pin the whole thing on you. But permanently.
You shouldn't have slammed the door, Crane. You'll make him mad.
Well, what happens now?
You're going back to your hotel, Mr. Cortland. And wait there till you hear from me. O'Malley and I got to pay a visit to the apartment where the missing body hanged herself. O'Malley, I thought I told you to stick out in the hall and keep your eyes peeled.
Sure, Crane, but I'm getting nervous. Found anything yet?
Nope. One funny thing, though. Alice Ross left a lot of brand new dresses here in this closet. Look, never been worn, but not a pair of shoes in the place.
That don't make sense, Crane.
You're telling me. O'Malley, take a look at this bathroom door. According to the papers... This is where Alice Ross hanged herself. Draped the cord over.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, let's see now. According to the papers, she came out of the bathtub and hanged herself while she was still wet. The police found a puddle of water on the floor.
That's nuts, Crane. Why would anybody take a bath if they were going to commit suicide? Unless they wanted to hang themselves up to dry.
Would anyone hang herself while she was still wet?
Oh, I think she'd dry herself first. Don't make sense.
It'd make good sense, O'Malley, if she didn't commit suicide. Yeah. It'd make better sense if she was murdered.
Yeah. Murdered?
She was murdered first, then the murderer hung her body up with a cord. O'Malley, get back in the hall and keep a lookout.
Sometimes I wonder what you'd do without me, Crane.
Sometimes I...
Now, what's the matter?
It's Grady and a bunch of cops. Let's get out of here quick.
Yeah, but where? It's 3 floors to the ground.
How about this window?
Great. Hey, there's a ledge.
What?
You go one way, I'll go the other.
Come on, open up. We know you're in there. Open up.
If I can hide in this room until... My toe.
Get out of here, girl!
You hear me? Shut up. Now listen. Listen, I don't want to hurt you and I don't want to rob you. And I'll turn you loose if you promise not to make a sound. Now remember, if you make a sound, you're going to get hurt. Is that clear? Okay.
You already hurt me. You hurt my mouth. What are you doing in my bathroom? What do you want anyway?
Now listen, honey, I didn't want to duck through your bathroom window. It was just convenient, that's all.
Well, get out.
When I'm ready. Hey, nice apartment you got here. Mind if I look around a bit?
If you don't get out of here, I'll phone the police.
You don't have to phone, sister. They're right next door.
What?
Yeah. Did you know the girl next door, the one who hanged herself? Alice Ross?
What's that to you? And keep out of my clothes closet.
Now listen, baby. You're a beautiful hunk of flesh, and I'd hate to get rough with you. But I like answers to questions when I ask them. Now, let's begin again. What's your name?
Udoni. That's my name. Mrs. Sam Udoni.
Ah, that's better. Now, about the girl next door.
I don't know anything about her.
Don't lie to me.
I'm not lying.
Maybe so, but this clothes closet is very interesting. Very.
Why, you...
Watch it, baby. Now, tell me this. Why have you got 2 different sizes of shoes there in the shoe closet? Oh, and dresses. And 2 different sizes. 2 complete wardrobes.
It's very simple. Some of them belong to my roommate. She's a blonde. She dresses different from me.
Thought you just said your name was Mrs. Udoni. Mrs. Sam Udoni.
My husband's a musician. He travels with bands. He's away all the time.
Yeah.
What are you asking me all these questions?
Your husband forgot to take his trumpet.
Why you...
Now, don't get sore. I'm getting out. I just heard the cops next door go down the hall. I'm, kind of sorry we met this way. You are a beautiful doll.
Don't be insulting.
I always like long black hair, the kind that comes out of a bottle.
Oh.
And don't be surprised if Papa comes back sometime.
Get out. Get out, do you hear? Get out before I kill you!
Man, I've had that happen to me many, many times.
Really?
Where the girl says, get out, and throws me out, and throws something at me, and it breaks the window.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Gosh, that was like deja vu.
For you.
Yeah, hearing that. But right now, we're listening to the Mystery Playhouse. This is called The Lady in the Morgue, and it's from May 15th, 1945. Peter Lorre is the host. Here's the conclusion to the Mystery Playhouse.
Well, that's what it all adds up to, Mr. Cortland. Alice Ross was murdered. And her body, obviously, was stolen from the morgue to cover up that murder. And if this girl was murdered, and she turns out to be your sister...
My sister is alive, Crane. I've just found out.
What? Mr. Cortland.
Oh, you heard from your sister?
Yes, she's alive. So, as she's obviously not the dead Alice Ross, I'd like you both to drop the case.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd like to do that, Mr. Cortland. I'd like to very much, but one small difficulty. You see, Lieberman, the morgue attendant, was murdered. And I'm still kind of a suspect, and so is O'Malley. And so are you.
Well, right.
Right. And the only way we can clear ourselves is to break the case ourselves.
Right.
Right. Besides, I think I know who helped to kill Lieberman and snatch the girl's body.
You do? Who?
An undertaker. A left-handed, red-headed undertaker.
That's ridiculous.
No, now, wait a minute, Mr. Cortland. Sometimes Crane gets brainstorms.
Figure it out, Mr. Cortland. The only way anyone could get into the morgue and carry the body away is through the delivery entrance. That means only an undertaker could get in there without a lot of questions.
What'd I tell you, Mr. Cortland? A brainstorm.
Right.
Right. Oh, this is all nonsense. Complete and utter nonsense.
Maybe so, but just to prove that it isn't... O'Malley's going out right now and find that undertaker.
Right. Me? Where am I going to find him?
You'll find him easy, O'Malley.
Sure, sure. I'll find him easy?
Well, if this is the only way we can clear ourselves, as you say, why, I ought to help find this undertaker.
Fine, Mr. Cortland. Now, let O'Malley cover one side of town and you cover the other. We'll meet here in 4 hours.
And what about you, Crane? What are you going to be doing?
Me? Didn't I tell you? I got a date with a gorgeous brunette. notices you, don't he? I told you I'd be back.
You. What are you doing here?
Oh, I came to hear the hot music and, be near you.
You've got a nerve after what happened today.
Hey, that's a solid horn your husband blows in that next room there.
Yeah, what makes you think he's my husband?
You said your husband was a musician, and I saw a trumpet here this morning.
Well, you see too much. What do you want, anyway?
How does a wife of a musician feel when another woman starts following him around the country?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Never heard of Catherine Cortland, huh?
She never meant anything to Sam.
She's been following him around for several years. Must have got someplace with him in that time.
Look, you better get out of here. My husband's coming in here.
Good. I want to see him.
I told him about you butting in here. I'll kill you.
Who is this guy, baby?
This is him, Sam.
You're looking for trouble, mister.
I like trouble.
What do you want with us?
I want Catherine Cortland, or I want a body.
What are you talking about?
Oh, don't be coy, you donny. I know Catherine Cortland left New York several years ago to follow you here.
What about it? Sure, she followed me here. Does that make me responsible for her? I haven't seen her for months.
And who was that living in the apartment next door to you?
How should I know? A girl commits suicide in the apartment next door, and right away I'm a suspect. Get out of here.
Okay, you donny. Just one thing. You see this nice shiny badge? The body of the blonde who was murdered in the apartment next to yours.
Apartment? Murdered? What are you... The paper said that...
Sure, the paper said suicide, but she was murdered, you dirty. Murdered. And her body will be in a city morgue in 4 hours, and I want you to come and take a look at it.
It's just like you said, Crane. There was a left-handed, red-headed undertaker. Only there isn't any more.
What do you mean?
Yeah. I went to his place, rang the bell. No answer. I went in, and there he was, murdered.
What? Murdered?
Yep. Stuffed in one of his own coffins, a knife right through his heart. Police hadn't even been there yet.
Oh, this is incredible.
Well, didn't you look around, O'Malley?
I'm no dope.
No?
I looked at his books. And I found out that a girl named Alice Hughes was buried today, Forest Tree Cemetery.
That's our blonde, you wonderful O'Malley. I love you.
Ah, it was simple.
Now, we got to move fast. Get out to the Forest Tree Cemetery, get that body, and return it to the morgue.
How about me?
You? You come along too, Cortland. Let's go. All right, O'Malley. Lift her up. Put her on the table. Easy now.
Now can I go?
Stick around. I got a job for you.
You certainly have a genius for the fantastic, Crane. Digging this body out of his grave, sneaking it in here in the morgue.
I only do what's necessary, Cortland. Now look, are you sure this girl isn't your sister?
Absolutely.
Well, it's the same body that was swiped from the morgue and she was murdered.
Murdered?
Furthermore... Whoever killed this girl knows I've located the body and returned it here to the morgue.
So what, Crane?
The killer's going to try to steal the body again. And you, Mr. Cortland and O'Malley, are going to catch him. Red-handed.
Me?
You.
But, Crane, how can you be sure?
I made sure. Now, listen. Here's what we're going to do. We leave the body here, on this table, with a sheet over it. Then you two get under the sheets on these other tables.
But those are tables they perform autopsies on.
Right. And a murderer, when he comes in, will never suspect that you're under those sheets.
All right, Crane. I'm game.
I'm leaving you two here alone. I'll beat it out and get Lieutenant Grady. Oh, I ought to warn you. No one knows you're down here in the vaults. Just you two. But don't worry. The killer will be here. Good luck, boys.
Just us two and the killer, Mr. Cortland.
I'm not afraid.
Let's get under the sheets now. Turn out the light. Mr. Cortland, will you do me a small favor?
Why, certainly, O'Malley. What is it?
Every now and then, reach over and pinch me.
That will be a pleasure. Why?
Every time I get under a sheet, I go to sleep.
You don't mean to say you could go to sleep in a morgue waiting for a murderer? Why, that's ridiculous.
My mind agrees with you, but when my body feels a shit, it goes to sleep. In fact, it's going now.
O'Malley. Hmm? Did you hear that?
What?
I swear the door opened and closed.
Listen. Footsteps.
Oh, yeah. Keep the sheet over your face.
Hey, let go of me. Let go. Hey, Crane. I've got him. Turn on the lights.
All right, Duke. Come on. I got you covered. Now, come on, get up off the floor. Well, thanks, O'Malley. I knew I could depend on you.
Right. Hey, this guy is Cortland.
Now, you tricked me, Crane. You were waiting at the end of the hall all the time.
And I suppose you didn't try to trick O'Malley and murder him in a bargain.
Yeah, but I don't get it. Did Cortland kill Lieberman? Did he steal the body?
Not so fast, O'Malley. Go ahead, go to the telephone and tell Lieutenant Grady to hurry over here to the city morgue. If he wants Lieberman's killer, I'll wait here. I'm still expecting Sam Udoni to show up and identify the girl's body. Oh, O'Malley.
Huh?
Another thing. Get me a bucket full of peroxide.
A bucket full... Peroxide?
Peroxide. I'll need it.
Now, what's this all about, Crane? And say, who are all these people?
Well, O'Malley, you know, and this is Sam Udoni and Mrs. Udoni, and this is my client, Mr. Cortland.
Your client? Then why you got him handcuffed?
Well, it ain't merely because he didn't pay his bill.
Now, no cracks! Crane, O'Malley told me on the phone that this blonde dame, Alice Ross, didn't commit suicide but was murdered. What about that?
Well, that's right, murdered. By this man right here.
But look, Crane, Cortland couldn't
Who
have...
said anything about Cortland? I said this man right here, meaning Sam Udoni.
That's a lie. You can't prove that.
Shut up. Now, Crane, you mean that Udoni committed all those murders?
No, my husband was with me when they were committed. And what reason would he have to kill this Alice Ross? Why, he didn't even know her.
How about that, Crane?
Well, Udoni ought to have known Alice Ross. He killed her because she wouldn't give him a divorce. Alice Ross was actually Mrs. Udoni.
How could she be? I am Mrs. Udoni.
Let me out of here.
Grab him, O'Malley.
Let me go.
Cut it out, Udoni. It won't do you any good.
It's better.
Don't talk, Sam. They can't prove anything.
Be quiet, you. By heavens, this is all beginning to make sense. That's why Udoni stole the body of his wife. So that he could pass off this woman here as Mrs. Udoni.
Right, Lieutenant.
Sure, I get it.
And now for the proof, O'Malley. O'Malley, hand me that bucket full of peroxide.
Yeah, Crane.
Hey, now wait a minute, Crane. Wait a minute before you start any shenanigans. If Alice Ross was actually Mrs. Udoni, who's this dame here?
Well, that's simple. She's Catherine Cortland.
What?
You're crazy. Catherine Cortland was a blonde.
Wait a minute. She's no blonde, Crane.
Oh, no? Just watch. Watch her hair, Lieutenant. Just watch her hair.
Yeah, say, the black is running out.
The dye, you mean. You better take her someplace where she can clean up, O'Malley.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Where does this guy Cortland fit in?
I'm afraid he was merely an unhappy accomplice, but go easy on him. He's a good guy.
Good guy. He tried to stab me.
Yeah, but he was dragged into this whole thing to protect his sister. And she was dragged in by Sam Udoni. He's the real louse.
Look, Crane, I'm not making any alibis, but I wish you'd answer me just one question.
Go ahead, shoot, Cortland.
How did you know my sister had dyed her hair?
Well, in your sister's apartment, I found a bottle of black hair dye and a bottle of peroxide in the bathroom. But what finally convinced me was the real Mrs. Udoni.
What do you mean?
You see, hair grows after death. And if you'll take a look at the dead girl's body, you'll see the roots of her blonde hair are all black.
Crane, all I can say, you make my hair stand on end.
Was Lady in a Morgue by Jonathan Latimer. Oh, yes, we were going to have a guest ghost on tonight's broadcast. Oh, but poor fellow. He was taken gravely ill. The doctors have given up all hope. He's going to live. By the way, if you have any pet vampires you'd like to hear about on these programs, just drop me a line. Just give the letter to your favorite witch with instructions to take her broomstick and knock on the door of the Mystery Playhouse. Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. Now it's time to close the doors before all these bats fly away. This is Peter Lorre saying good night. Sleep tight. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Good night, sleep tight, Lisa. Don't let the bats go flying away.
He does a really good job.
he's better at doing Peter Lorre than I am.
I didn't say that. I'm just...
Roger does a good Peter Lorre, too, I'll tell you that.
It's all the right. Battle of Peter Lorre's going on here
It
tonight.
Was. It was like VH1, Peter Lorre. Which one? Who does a better Peter Lorre?
Who wore it better?
Yeah, that is the Mystery Playhouse from May 15th, 1945, The Lady in the Morgue. Peter Lorre as host. Hope you enjoyed that.